Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, June 29th. I'm Ray Graff. Well, it's our Pets and Vets show for the month of June today. Joining us is veterinarian Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin of Del Mar Animal Hospital in Del Mar, New York. Always a popular guest. Always good to get in early when Carrie is on. You can give us a call, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Your calls, your comments, tweets, and much more all coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Well, it's our Pets and Vets program this afternoon. Here to take your calls once again, Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin of Del Mar Animal Hospital in Del Mar, New York. Dr. O'Loughlin is a USDA-accredited veterinarian, and we've been through this. I know probably you don't want to talk about Category 1, but whatever. A graduate of Cornell University, always a popular guest here. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number, 800-348-2551. You can also email us, voxpop@wamc.org. Tweet us your questions and comments at WAMCVoxPop, or even go to Facebook if you wish. If you're one of those old-timers like me that enjoys Facebook, it's facebook.com/WAMCRadio. But again, the phone number here is 800-348-2551. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin, welcome back.
Well, thank you. It's great to be back.
You know, you're on the foothills of the mountains there at the Del Mar Animal Hospital. Have you seen any bobcats?
Yeah, not personally, but for those people who didn't hear in the news, there was a recent rabid bobcat that actually attacked two people in New Scotland.
So it was rabid.
It was rabid, yes. And when I first heard that, I figured it had to be because bobcats are pretty timid. They're not the type of animal to just come out of the woods and bite someone.
Right.
So when I heard it had done that, it didn't surprise me to hear that it tested positive for rabies.
Well, it was having a bad day prior to that.
Yep. So I spoke to someone from the DEC yesterday who was in my office, and the bobcat had been sprayed by a skunk.
Oh, boy.
And had gotten porcupine quills. And the porcupine quill part was interesting because the folks at the rabies lab told him that every wild animal they have ever tested that had porcupine quills was rabid.
Really?
So clearly, wild animals are usually smart enough to stay away from the porcupines.
So if basically the lesson here is if you see a porcupine, don't get too close.
Well, the porcupines, porcupines can carry rabies. But the important thing would be if you saw something like an injured raccoon something else that had quills in them, stay away.
So in other words, if it lacked the good sense to stay away from a porcupine, it probably had rabies.
Exactly.
It's not the porcupines that have rabies. So have you ever worked on a porcupine?
I actually worked on a porcupine yesterday.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Yes.
Really?
We had a poor little porcupine who got hit by a car.
Oh.
And had a very bad cut on its back that needed to be sewed up. And a little worried at this point. He might have a spinal cord injury as well. I didn't actually see him walk at any point, but he did move his tail, so we're hopeful.
Well, that's got to be a dicey little suture, right?
Yeah, it was interesting because the fellow who brought him in had covered him with a towel in order to pick him up and then asked if he could get his towel back. And when I peeled the towel off, it basically came up filled with quills.
Yeah.
So I very carefully handed him the towel and said, have fun pulling the quills out.
Now, if a porcupine survived that, if the porcupine survives, will he grow new quills?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
They're just modified hairs, so they'll grow back.
But they hurt.
They're pokey.
Did you get stuck at all when you were operating?
A little pokey here and there. But it's interesting. I did, the first time I've ever seen the underside, they have no quills on their underside at all.
Well, you got to figure they got to lie down, right?
Yep. Yep.
Wow, that's amazing. Our guest is Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin. It's Pets and Vets. And, the phone lines are loading up here. So let's get right to it. Let's go to Jesse and Troy. Jesse, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I actually had a question about declining veterinary care. I have a friend who had a beloved family cat with a urinary blockage. And it was going to be very expensive to to rectify the situation, and she didn't have the money to do it, and she just wanted to take the cat back home and, you know, let it die at home, essentially. And the veterinarian would not let her just take the cat back. Basically, they said the options are either you have the procedure done or you can sign away your rights to the cat. and they'll either euthanize it or do the surgery and then put it up for adoption. But I was kind of struck by the fact that, like, it was like once you went in, you either had to, you know, shell out all this money or give up your cat, basically.
That's a very interesting question.
And I thought that maybe, you know, it was just a one-time thing, but I've since heard two other people, so a total of three people now, who have faced this situation. And I just wanted to know, you know, if that's standard veterinary practice or if there's some kind of a rule or if it's just, you know, what your take was on that situation.
So in the situation of a blocked cat, the problem with that is you can't really decline care because he's going to die. That is, you know, when they have a urinary obstruction, if you don't fix it, they die, period. And it's a nasty death. So I would have been right there. In fact, we have a cat that's living at our animal hospital right now that is there for that very reason, because he obstructed and the owners couldn't afford to take care of him. They didn't want him to die, so they signed him over to us.
Huh.
So it's different if it's just a sick cat and you don't have the money and, you know, whatever. But with a blocked cat, really it's do or die. So, you know, and letting the people take the cat home just to die at home is sort of cruel and unusual punishment for the poor cat.
All right,
so
Jesse.
I guess I would have agreed in that case.
So that's an interesting situation. So if the person can't pay, then they sign the cat over. And you do the surgery anyway, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, you can't. I mean, it depends. It depends on the situation. But we have taken animals in like that, that the people can't, you know. It's a healthy cat, except for this one issue. And you hate to have this nice, healthy cat put to sleep. And it's unfortunate. It's a very sad fact of veterinary medicine.
Yeah.
Is, you know, not everyone has insurance.
Yeah.
And it costs money to take care of patients, and sometimes people can't afford it. So
let's go over to Nancy in Wilton. Nancy, you're on.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. I wish I could spend an hour talking to you, but I can't.
So
I'm going to be really brief.
Okay.
I adopted a Springer Spaniel who was going to be put down, and he's 10 years old, and I've called before about him. He's got pretty bad health. He's got a hip dysplasia. He has active Lyme. And what we're dealing with right now, I spent, you know, probably a couple thousand dollars on him, is that he is bloated. He is constantly nauseous. And he doesn't want to eat food. And I was at the vet's, and they said, he's just a very sensitive stomach dog. And I just wanted to know, you know, is there anything else? Because he put him on Serenia, and it does nothing. I've tried Pepto-Bismol. It does nothing. I've tried charcoal, a little activated charcoal. I've had a little success with it. But the doctor just put him on curcumin, turmeric formula.
Okay.
But he's also on carprofen, which they said irritates the stomach, theophylline for his breathing, hydroxyzine for allergies, and then tramadol for pain. Anything laid up there that helps maybe which direction we should go in?
Yeah.
And he's also on a diet, prescription diet, Royal Canin Gastrointestinal Low-Fat.
Okay, so that is basically just a bland, easily digestible diet.
Right.
My only other thought, I guess, would be, because it is hard when you have an older dog. It's like an older person that has all sorts of medications for all sorts of different problems.
Yeah.
And we don't know. Does a combination of those things upset their stomach? It could. The other possibility is dogs can develop food allergies at any point or food intolerances.
Yeah.
So another possibility would be trying a different diet that's a limited ingredient diet, and that you'd have to, you know, go to one of the ones that either a hydrolyzed protein, which Royal Canin makes one of those as well.
Why hydrolyzed?
Hydrolyzed, so they chop up all the proteins into little tiny pieces so that the body doesn't recognize it as a specific protein.
And will you still get the benefits of the protein?
Yes. Yep. So it's chopping. It's, you're still getting the amino acids, but the immune system doesn't say, oh, that's tuna fish and I don't like tuna fish, or, you know, that's chicken. Otherwise, you can go to one of the limited ingredient diets that have come out that are like venison and green pea. That would be something else to try.
How soon would you know if, in fact, it was working?
With stomach issues, it's usually pretty quick.
Yeah.
If it's a skin issue, it can take a couple of months. But if it's a stomach thing, I would think within the first week or 10 days, you should know. So I would give that a shot, Nancy, and see if that helps them.
Nancy, thank you so much for the call. Let's see, we only got about a minute here before the break. So, we'll take one more. Why not? We'll take it now, and then we'll take a break. Let's go to Rhonda in Sheffield, Mass. Rhonda, you're on.
Good afternoon, Dr. O'Loughlin. I have a question regarding my 10-year-old spayed female pit bull. When she lays down, she wets herself. And I wondered if there was a homeopathic or a natural remedy I could give her to alleviate the situation.
Well, unfortunately, Rhonda, I got to tell you, I'm not a big person as far as homeopathic goes. I don't have a lot of knowledge of homeopathic remedies. I bet you anything there are remedies out there. This is certainly a common problem in spayed females because of the lack of estrogen in their system. So non-homeopathic, I basically would give her an estrogen supplement, and that usually does the trick. I'm sure there are homeopathic vets in the area. You might want to try and look one up and see if they could help you, but unfortunately, that's a little out of my knowledge range.
Rhonda, thanks a lot for the call. Our guest is Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin of the Del Mar Animal Hospital. And, you know, if you want to talk bobcats or porcupines, that's okay, too. Dogs and cats, we like that. Give us a call, 800-348-2551. We'll be right back.
Support for WMC comes from Quality Foreign Car Care, Ballston Spa, New York, specializing in European car sales and service for over 20 years. QFCC.com. Empire Exhibits and Displays, Mechanicville, New York. Custom exhibits, interactive media displays, and commercial casework for corporate interiors, museum installations, and trade shows. EmpireExhibits.com. Interim Healthcare. For 45 years, working to help people age in place, companion aides, and nurses 7 days a week, serving the Capital Region, Columbia County, Glens Falls, and Saratoga, interimhealthcare.com. Wash and Wag Pet Grooming Salon, Great Barrington, Massachusetts. Professionally trained groomers, organic, natural products, no cage drying, Facebook and 866-WASH-WAG. And Capital Roots, working to help people in the Capital Region access healthy, affordable, and local food, grow, educate, provide. CapitalRoots.org for information on how to support.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Pets and Vets here with Ray Graff and our guest today, Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin of Del Mar Animal Hospital. Before we get back to the phones at 800-348-2551, let's take an email from Josh. Could you elaborate on the legalities of a veterinarian being able to keep a pet against an owner's wishes? Can the owner be charged for animal cruelty for bringing the pet home to suffer? The second question in particular was a good one.
Yeah, the second one's a tough one. You can't keep an animal against an owner's wishes. I mean, if they really refuse to turn the cat over. Now, if they took a cat home that you knew was going to die, boy.
Is there a Hippocratic Oath?
I mean, there is. You're supposed to, you know, do no harm.
So
and
basically, if you know that this cat will die,
yes,
then it's a real moral struggle for you.
Yes. And, you know, I would have a real heart to heart with the owner. And I've done this with owners that have just animals that are dying of kidney disease. Because that's basically what a blocked cat dies of. It's just a very rapid form of it. And I've had people just want the cat to die at home. And I try to explain to them that it's just a nasty, horrible way to die. And I always say, you know, if you woke up with the flu and the worst hangover of your life, would you want to, you know, that to be the way you die?
Which I've done.
Yeah.
I lived, oddly enough.
Yeah.
All right, let's go back to the phones, and let's go to Jeanette in Beacon. Jeanette, you're on.
Thank you, Ray, and hello, Kerry. I have a 14-year-old Bombay who has terrible fleas because he escaped out into the garden, and he's an inside cat. And for the last 4 months, I've been trying to rid him of it, or them, unsuccessfully. And I wondered if you had any tips.
So what have you done to try and get rid of the fleas?
We comb him every evening with apple cider vinegar and hot water. And we constantly vacuum. But we have wooden floors, and I think that they're kind of getting down into the cracks in the floors. We also have a bug light, which we keep by one of his beds, which catches lots. But they are pretty much everywhere.
Yeah. Unfortunately, are you against using one of the spot-on topical flea products? Because that would do it.
I haven't done yet. Yeah.
Yeah. Honestly, yeah. I would pick one of the ones. Don't get like a heart. You know, I don't want to name trade names, but don't pick one of the ones that you buy in a grocery store because those tend to be the older style, more toxic.
Now you're talking about you put it on the back of the
right,
neck?
Right. The once a month spot on flea products. There are several brand names out there. You can buy them at your local veterinarian. They're over the counter for the most part, most of them. And, they're very, very safe for the cat and very, very not safe for the fleas. Hmm. And it takes about 4 months to fully get rid of a house infestation because you kill the fleas that are on the cat and you inactivate the eggs. But there is a form that of the flea that sort of hibernates in the floors, and they can hatch out over a several-month period. So
okay.
If you do it for 4 months, you will get rid of all the fleas.
And the collar is not a good idea, the Seresto?
They work okay. I don't know that a collar is going to work in a big infestation like this.
Okay.
You want something that's really going to kill everything that gets near the cat.
All right. Jeanette, that good for you?
Thank you. Yeah. What about how to work? Because we were thinking about actually going to book ourselves into a hotel for a couple of days. Clean him off so he doesn't have any fleas on him, and then actually bombing the house with that smoke kind of, I don't know much about him, but my partner does.
Yeah, the problem is the bombs don't get the pupal form that's in the cocoon. Mm. So you're still going to have that problem. So I'm not a huge fan of the bombing of the house. I think you're better off just treating the cat, letting the cat be a flea magnet, and in 4 months' time, it'll be gone. And you won't see the fleas on the cat because they'll jump on the cat and die. So.
Well, that's great. I shall try that. Thank you so much because it's driving him absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Poor little thing.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jeanette.
Thank you very, very much, Ray and Kerry. Thank you.
You're welcome.
800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Let's check the newfangled system here and see who's been waiting longest. Looks like it's Debbie in Woodstock. Debbie, you're on.
Hi, can you hear me?
Sure.
Okay, I have a poodle Bichon mix that I adopted about 10 years ago. He's about 13 now. For the past 2 years, he's been developing these growths all over his body. They call them papillomas, I think. And I've had some of them frozen off. I've had a few cut out. But they just keep coming back everywhere. I was wondering if there's any way to control the growth of those or any better way to get rid of them than those methods?
My guess is they are probably adenomas. They're basically very common in the poodle, Bichon-type dogs as they get older. And more times than not, they're just really a growth of out of their wax glands. They can be smooth. They can be irregular. They generally don't bother the dog so much. And in my mind, if they don't bother the dog, I leave them alone. They're benign. They're not going to cause, you know, spread anywhere to the other parts of the body or cause any medical problems for the dogs. The only time I would take them off is if they're in a spot that's really irritating or the dog is chewing on them. Does it seem to bother your dog?
The ones on his legs, he licks them every day. He practically licks them off, I think.
Yeah.
But then they're coming out, like, on his eye, in his mouth, on his genitals, everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately, if they are truly papillomas, were they biopsied?
Yes. Yes, he did. When he took one of them out, he biopsied it.
Okay. Because a papilloma is a little different. That is a viral thing. And again, they generally are self-limiting. They will come and go. If they are in a bad spot, unfortunately, removing them is about the only way to go. I don't know that antivirals are that effective against papillomas.
Okay.
Or anything in his diet, perhaps?
No, I don't think anything in the diet is going to help, unfortunately.
You know, the vet, when he froze the last eight off, he said that there's some thought that by freezing them off, that could actually make some of them that are on him retreat or, you know, disappear. It didn't happen, but he was hoping for that.
Yeah, and sometimes they retreat on their own, too, so.
All right. I'm waiting for that. Thank you.
Sorry.
Debbie, thanks a lot for the call. Our number here on Vox Pop is 800-348-2551. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin is our guest, and let's head over to Tracy in Gilderland. Tracy.
Yes, hi. I actually have a question about a bird for a little change of pace.
Do you do birds?
Well, I'm hoping.
I'll try.
You do birds?
Not really, but I'll give it a shot here.
Okay. Well, this is actually, this might be good because it's actually a skin question I have. So I recently adopted a 22-year-old Senegal parrot, and she is doing very, very well. But because she, I think, suffered a little bit of boredom in her life, she didn't really have much to do except hang out in her cage. She started over preening, and what she does is she doesn't pluck, but she strips her feathers. So just the center shaft is left, and she, you know, strips all the feathery parts.
Oh boy.
And so I'm bathing her regularly, and now she's got, you know, toys and attention and a better diet and all that stuff. And she, you know, I've had her checked. It's not, you know, there's nothing going on with her skin. It's just to try to help her possibly stop this overpreening. I had heard that I could use a food grade aloe to spray on her, and then just after that, then just spray regular water. But I wasn't sure what the process was, and I was hoping maybe you might have some idea.
Well, I'm sorry, but I don't. I would contact a veterinarian that does birds. So, I unfortunately.
22 is very old, right?
Well, no, parrots can live a long time.
How long can a parrot live?
Oh gosh, they can live to be 50, 60.
Yeah,
wow.
I mean these are little African parrots. They're Senegals, and they go 30 or 35 years.
That's amazing.
But I have an Amazon who's 12. Who, you know, if everything goes well, she'll go to 50 or 60 or more. So they're long-lived.
Yeah.
Carrie,
I'm so sorry, Tracy.
That's
but...
okay. No, that's okay. There are, you know, there's some great vets in the area, but I just, while you were on the phone today, I thought, aha, I can get this answered.
Yeah.
So, but I will go searching. But thank you, and it's a great show today. Thanks, guys.
Okay.
Did you see that news piece about the parrot that will be a part of a murder trial?
No.
It was last week. Apparently, and it's horrifying if it's true, but the parrot is like
repeating
the words from the final confrontation.
Oh,
it's like a Perry Mason episode.
It seems like that would be hearsay.
I agree. I think that will be a tough one to make stand. All right, let's go to Barbara in Woodstock. Barbara, you're on.
Yes, hi. My cat went appeared to be suddenly blind a week ago. She's relatively healthy. She has had a respiratory ailment on and off for a couple of years. She had, just a few weeks before she went blind, she had blood work and fecal work and a big checkup, and everything came back fine. I've heard there's such a thing as sudden acute retinal displacement.
is integration. I was going to take you to a specialist today, but unfortunately I got a flat tire and the specialist was booked. Do you have any inkling as to what could cause a cat so suddenly blind? She's probably 13 years old.
Okay,
so a couple of 13-year-old cat that suddenly goes blind, a couple of things come to mind. One is hypertension or high blood pressure. Cats can develop high blood pressure, not generally on its own, but usually because they have another disease like an overactive thyroid or hyperthyroidism or kidney disease, which are both fairly common in the teenage cats. And basically the high blood pressure makes their retinas detach. If that is caught soon enough, and treated, it can potentially, they can sometimes reattach themselves. And then the other thing is the sudden acquired retinal dysplasia. And that is basically, the retinas just stop working, and there's no treatment for that.
Is there any reason for that?
Nobody knows what it is. Mm. No. So it's, definitely getting the cat in and having someone look in the back of her eyes will tell you whether it's something potentially fixable or not, and sooner rather than later.
Hey, Barbara, when you brought your kitty in for a checkup, was that just a regular checkup, or was there a reason that you brought the cat in? We're getting a bad connection there. I'm just wondering if there was some reason that she brought the cat to the vet initially.
Yep.
That may be an underlying cause there. Yep. Well, that was an interesting call. Sorry we lost you there, Barbara. Let's go over to line 3 and Elizabeth in Newburgh. Elizabeth, you're on with Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin.
Hello. I have a question about dogs and fleas, specifically products I had used. Am I allowed to say a brand name on the air?
Well, you can. Go right ahead.
Okay, I had used a Seresto collar that I bought at the end of last year. He got fleas. That wasn't working. I gave him a bath. I used Frontline, and he got fleas again. So before I poisoned my dog with some more flea treatments, I did give him another flea bath, but he's got fleas again, and I bought some Advantage 2. But before I poisoned him by giving him too much flea treatment, I just want to know if it's safe to do that.
Oh, absolutely.
And what do you do?
Yep.
Okay, sorry.
Absolutely. The Advantage is one of those products, same with Frontline, that do not get absorbed into the dog system. They are literally just sitting on the outside of the dog on the skin. So it's very, very safe for them. I would say flea baths, I think that's probably more toxic than just about anything else. So, and I don't think they work that great. So I would much rather see you use something like, Advantage or Frontline or one of the other topicals.
It sounds like Elizabeth has used some good products and still has a flea issue.
Yeah.
Why would there be a real persistent issue there?
The problem is the environment. Most of the fleas live in the environment and not on the animal.
Yeah.
So you can treat the animal, and if they walk into the environment that's full of fleas and they jump on them, you can still be seeing fleas on them. But as I say, if they've got a product on their skin, one of these topicals, or now there's a new oral flea and tick medicine, any bug you see on them is a dead bug walking. So they're going to die.
Okay.
And they're not going to reproduce, because they also have stuff in these products that keep them from reproducing. So as long as you use them consistently, you will get rid of the flea problem.
Okay, so I don't have carpets or anything. So I was wondering if I'm at the point where I should buy something for my yard, like my backyard.
Yeah, but then in my mind, your dog's going to go out in the backyard and get, exposed to that toxin.
Yeah.
So
what could you do on a large scale basis for your backyard?
Well, they make products to treat yards with.
Really?
But again, to me, we don't know what causes cancer in animals, and all these poisons we're putting out there. I would rather use something I know is safe on the animal and use it 12 months a year, and then you shouldn't have a problem.
Okay. All right. I'll keep with the Advantage too, because I'll try that, and if it works, I'll keep with that.
Good.
Okay.
Fair enough. Thanks
a lot. Thank you.
Bye now. 800-348-2551, the telephone number. and it's Vox Pop, Pets and Vets Edition with Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin. Let's go to Chris in Rensselaer. Chris.
Yeah, hi. I was at an adoption clinic, and there was an 11-year-old cat there who has really needs a little dental work. And in her chart, it said that she has a heart murmur. And I don't know what that indicates, but I had a cat with cardiomyopathy in the past that had a heart murmur, and I couldn't do dental work on him. So I was just wondering what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, so, you know, cats can have a murmur, and it can mean that they have cardiomyopathy, which, for those who don't know, is a basically a thickening of the heart muscle that happens in cats. Or it can mean that they just have a heart murmur and they don't have any clinical heart disease. I've also seen cats with pretty severe cardiomyopathy who don't have a murmur. It would be good to get the cat's heart checked before the dental work. And there are a couple of different ways you can do that. I mean, the classic way is to, you know, have a cardiologist look at their heart with an ultrasound. We do also have another way now where you can screen them with a blood test. And basically, you are measuring for certain enzymes in the blood produced by the heart. And the higher the level, the more likely it is that they have heart disease. And it's called a BNP test, pro-BNP. And so...
Say that again?
Pro-BNP.
Okay.
And you send that in, and if it's less than 100, the cat does not have clinically significant heart disease. And if it's between 100 and 300, maybe. And if it's greater than 300, definite.
Okay.
So it gives you an idea whether you should follow up.
Yep, yeah, maybe I could get them to do it before I adopt the cat.
You could, you could see. I don't know if, you know, it costs like $100, give or take, you know. Okay. So I don't know whether the rescue groups could handle that.
But. Well, Chris, we appreciate the call. We're going to take a break here. It's Pets and Vets edition of Vox Pop, 800-348-2551, the number, and we'll be back for the home stretch in a moment.
Support for WMT comes from Boston Spa Veterinary Clinic, dedicated to serving clients and their pets of Saratoga County and beyond for over 80 years. Open 7 days a week with extended hours, bostonspavet.com. Pave, tile, wood, and stone. Using French artisan techniques to manufacture pre-finished oak floors, decorative and terracotta tile, and importing aged French limestone, showroom by appointment and online, pavetile.com. College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts. For over 30 years, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair and 24-hour towing, full-service gas includes checking of fluids, tire pressure, and window washing. CollegeStreetMotors.com. Claire Pearson, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. For 14 years, offering plant spirit medicine and energy clearing for health, body, mind, and spirit. CLAREPearson.net. And Northeast Solar in Hatfield, Massachusetts, helping Pioneer Valley residents live more sustainably with solar power for home, business, or farm. Keep solar local, northeast-solar.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC, 800-348-2551, the number. It's Pets and Vets today. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin is here. And, you know, the thought occurred to me with the last question, which is pretty involved about heart issues in cats. Now, there have been vets for hundreds of years, let's say. But science is now getting so advanced, and perhaps vets are catching up in the high-tech department with their human counterparts, the doctors who deal with humans. Has the life expectancy for, say, a cat, the average cat, increased over the last 20 to 50 years?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah?
Absolutely. I mean, I can remember when, you know, they used to think a 10-year-old cat was old.
Yeah.
You know, now 10 years old, I joke that they get their AARP card when they're 10, and then when they get to be 15 or 16, now they've got Social Security age. But, we're seeing, cats live into their teens all the time now, and their later teens.
That's amazing. Well, that's great. That's great to hear. Our number is 800-348-2551, and let's go to yet another Elizabeth. I think we've had 12 Elizabeths on this show. This is Elizabeth in Clifton Park. You're on.
Hi. I'm calling about a cat, a 12-year-old male orange cat, and he is strictly indoors. Above his nose, like on the bridge of his nose where the fur is, he had a little scrape, a little sore that just wouldn't heal. And I took him to the vet, and the vet gave me an antifungal lotion to put on it, and that helped. But he said if that didn't take care of it, the next thing he would do would be like a little biopsy. And so I've been hesitant to take him back because the antifungal helped, but I still feel like there's a lump under there, but he's not at all bothered by it. And I don't really want to put him through a little biopsy, but on the other hand, I get nervous about not doing anything. So is this a spot where a cat could get a tumor, and would it spread, or would it be, if it's not bothering him, would he just be fine?
Right. So there was a sore, but now there isn't a sore. There's just a bump?
More of a bump now. The antifungal did help.
Okay.
It used to be like a little red, bleedy sore. So it is improved, but now it's like there's a lump.
Well, unfortunately, there are tumors, like cats can get tumors just about anywhere, but there are tumors when I first heard that made me think of something called a squamous cell carcinoma, which is a form of a skin cancer. But in that case, they tend to stay scabby and wanting to be a sore. If it has healed over and it's not oozing anymore, it probably wouldn't hurt too badly to just watch it a little bit. If the bump is getting any larger, then for sure you would want to get it checked and then potentially do a biopsy. But if it's just, a little leftover bump, if he had had a skin sore there, sometimes the skin will stay a little thickened for a while until it finishes healing. So it could still be in the healing stages.
Okay.
So it probably wouldn't hurt to wait just a little bit, but if it starts going the other way at all, then I'd get him right in.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you.
Bye now. 800-348-2551, the number. Let's go over to Pat in Adams, Mass. Pat, you're on with Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a Welsh Corgi, about 35 pounds. And I want to know how the doctor feels about using something like Interceptor Plus for heartworm.
A heartworm prevention.
Right.
Yes.
Have you?
I think it's a good product. Heartworm is definitely one of those diseases that it is easier to prevent than it is to treat. Prevention, you're just giving your dog a pill or a chewable tablet, depending on, what form you're using, once a month. And, they're generally not going to get heartworm. If they get heartworm, the treatment is very involved. And the biggest thing I always tell people is no fun, no walking, no playing, no anything for 6 weeks. They basically sit in a crate for 6 weeks. So it's definitely, in my mind, way better to use a preventative than do nothing.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
I have another thing for the caller that called about flea and tick collars.
Yeah.
I use Scalibor flea and tick collars, and my corgi is 7 years old, and he has never had fleas or ticks. And I put this collar on him at 7 weeks old. And they last for about 6 or 7 months. They're a little pricey, but they are well worth it.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, thanks, Pat. We appreciate the call. And let's see here. Let's, you know what? Let's go to yet another Elizabeth. This one in Northampton. Elizabeth, you're on.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question. I had for many years a lab mix that got his rear end didn't work. He had degenerative myelopathy, and he has since passed. But I was just wondering, about 2 years ago, I was just wondering if there are any new treatments for that or anything new that's been discovered about that disease that, just curious about it. He was wonderful. I got him a wheelchair. We had a great time for about 3 years, longer than I thought I would have him. But I just wondered if there's anything new that's been found about it.
Well, the one thing new since your dog had it, for sure, is there is now a test we can do where you're actually testing to see if it is degenerative myelopathy, for sure. There used to be, you know, besides doing looking at their spinal cord after death, there wasn't any way to know when they were alive. Looking at clinical signs. But now there's basically an antibody test that you can look for. And that's helpful because you can say for sure that that's what we're dealing with. As far as treatment...
Yeah, our vet just ruled out everything else and said that's probably what it is.
So as far as treatment goes, unfortunately, I haven't heard of any new great and fantastic treatments. I think they've gone much more into the physical therapy, exercise, those kinds of things. You know, they've definitely found exercise is helpful. So
It sure was for him. He got in that cart, and even though that rear end didn't work at all, he was a happy boy. He went everywhere with it. So
I mean, it's
cool.
The good news is it's not a painful disease for these dogs. It's just
not at all.
Things just don't work anymore.
Okay.
They just don't. So thank you so much.
No problem.
We appreciate it, Elizabeth. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Let's go over to Susan in Northampton. Susan, you're on.
Hi there. I have a 3-year-old female Siamese. I got her at 8 weeks old as a rescue. About 6 months ago, I introduced another cat into the home, and at that point, my Siamese got a kidney infection. So I was told after that the PET scan or whatever they've done, CAT scan, had shown that she has abnormally small kidneys. And I'm just wondering, is there any kind of food I should give her or avoid on a regular basis to keep her from getting kidney infection or kidney disease?
Well, there's not a food per se you can give to keep her from getting an infection, but certainly for kidney disease, yes.
Yeah. What would that be?
It would be unfortunately only available by prescription. You're not going to find it in a pet store. You'd have to go through your veterinarian. But they have a wide variety of kidney diets that are out there. In fact, the kidney diets was the very first prescription diet that was ever made. And they're basically lower in protein because protein is one of the main waste products that the kidneys have to deal with. And so by feeding a lower protein diet, you're decreasing the workload on the kidney that you have left. And I've certainly seen cats live a lot longer and seen their blood values drop if they eat a kidney diet. And with the
that's fantastic.
Yep, and with the wide variety of kidney diets now, you can usually find something the cat will like.
And is that wet or dry?
Both. Although I would really lean towards canned if you have a cat with kidney disease because you want to get as much water into them as possible.
Sue, thank you so much. No, it wasn't Sue. Gosh dang it, I forgot the name here.
Yes, it was. It was.
Was Sue?
Yep.
All right. Let's go over to Chrissy in Gilderland. Chrissy.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was calling because my parents have a 10-year-old Shiba Inu, and recently the dog has started limping. But in the meantime, she'll still try and hop over fences and things like that. My parents had her at the vet's office a few weeks ago, and the vet didn't really take a look at the leg, but kind of just, I think, said, well, maybe we can put her on some medication if you'd like. My parents took the dog home, and the limping hasn't stopped, and they were just wondering if they should assume it's arthritis or if it could be something more.
I'm sorry, Chrissy, how old did you say the dog was?
It's a 10-year-old Shiba Inu.
Oh, okay, 10 years old. Well, certainly it could be arthritis, but, you know, it could be an injury as well. Front leg, back leg?
Hind leg.
Okay. Because certainly front leg injuries always take much longer to heal than back leg. So, you know, for the most part, when you have an older dog that has a lameness, it could be a number of things. It could be an injury. It could be an injury that is in an arthritic leg, which then, you know, makes it take that much longer to heal. If they already have a joint that's not normal and you twist it, it's going to be sore for that much longer. It could be something like, you know, Lyme disease or one of the inflammatory diseases. So without seeing the dog, it's hard to say. I guess I would say if you rest the dog and it's not getting better, it might be time for a recheck and see if they can figure out what's going on.
Is there a way to kind of encourage her to rest more? Because, like I said, she'll try and hop fences, and then other days she'll be completely off that leg.
Yeah. So basically, leash walk only. Don't let her out running, chasing squirrels in the yard. Trying to keep her from doing too many stairs in the house. You know, just have her be a little couch potato for a few days.
Okay.
Okay. If it is arthritis, is there anything over the counter to give her, like a baby aspirin or anything like that?
Well, you can do aspirin in dog. The problem with dogs is pretty much if you give them aspirin, eventually they're going to get an ulcer.
Yeah.
So short term, you know, you can do an aspirin just to see if pain relief is going to help her and then get her on a better pain reliever. But it's better to use one of the prescription pain relievers if possible.
Okay. Well, we thank you for that call. Let's go over to Pittsfield and Linda. Linda, you're on.
Hi. I have a 4-year-old Scottish Terrier that has a lot of allergies. The vet had a specialist in. They developed it when she was about a year and a half old. She gets these scabby bumps on her back that you can actually pick them off. They take a little hair with them. So the vet had a specialist look at her, and they formulated these drops I give her every single day, and then she also has a little pill I give her. I'm not home, so I can't tell you the name of it. And then about every eight weeks or so, we put her on antibiotics, and that takes, when the bumps start to develop again, antibiotics take the bumps away. I just wondered if you had any recommendations.
So this is a seasonal allergy, or it's year-round?
No, it's year-round.
Okay.
We changed her food initially. She's on like a limited ingredient signature, it's called, that's made here in the U.S. And
did that help?
That didn't seem to help anyway. No,
no.
Didn't.
Okay.
She doesn't act like anything bothers her, except she seems to want to roll on her back and maybe itch them.
Right.
But I looked it up online, and it seemed like other people had dogs that had these scabby, they're little scabby bumps.
Yeah, so generally it's a skin infection, and unfortunately dogs get skin infections because they have allergies. So it's really, if you can get to the bottom of the allergy, is the best way to keep her from getting the skin infections. Have you had her allergy tested?
Yes. Yeah, there was a specialist that came to the vet one Saturday and kept her all day and tested her, and she's allergic to, you know, weird grasses and dust mites and all sorts of stuff. And so they formulated this special.
So she's on immuno.
And she gets a drop under her tongue. Every single day.
Gotcha. So and how long has she been on the immunotherapy?
Probably a year and a half.
Okay.
Year maybe.
And it certainly hasn't controlled her.
No, I think it's better maybe, but
okay.
You know, I expected the drops to completely, fix it.
Yeah, unfortunately, with immunotherapy, which is basically you're trying to make the dog's immune system not care about the allergy anymore, it only works about 60% of the time.
Okay.
So, you know, the best thing would be bathing and trying to avoid the things that she's allergic to the best she can.
All right, let's quickly go over to Beth in East Hampton. Beth, I'm sorry, you only have about a minute here.
Okay, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a 12-year-old cat who 3 months ago I was told has tooth resorption.
Yes.
Is there anything I can do for that?
What is tooth resorption?
So tooth resorption is a disease that cats get. It's basically something they're probably born with. And it's their body dissolves their own teeth.
Ew. Ouch.
Right.
So really the only thing that, well, there are several things you can do. You can try brushing their teeth. most cats will not tolerate that.
Right.
So really, it's routine dental care. Unfortunately, a lot of these cats are going to end up losing most of their teeth over time. But they are, it is a painful thing when they basically get cavities on the sides of their teeth. So it's just getting your cat checked. You might want to plan on having the cat checked twice a year instead of once a year, and make sure that the teeth are not getting bad again, and regular dental cleanings and tooth extraction when needed.
Well, that's where we will have to leave it. What a busy show we had, huh? So how'd you like the new phone system?
It's different.
You can't really read the little font, can you?
It was easier to read the sticky notes.
I know. I like that better, too, but I'm very old school. Well, Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin, we'll see you again soon.
I don't know. You'll have to talk to Jessica.
Stay away from the porcupines. Try anyway. Nice to have you on the show. Support comes from the Lathrop community, serving older adults in the Quaker tradition for over 25 years, independent living in Northampton and East Hampton, Massachusetts, in the heart of the Pioneer Valley, lathrop.kendall.org. Bed and Bowl, Huntington, Massachusetts, a home-style bed and breakfast for dogs, offering overnight boarding on a 50-acre farm convenient to Northampton, Springfield, and the Berkshires, bedandbowl.com. Pine Cobble School, Williamstown, Massachusetts, where last year students consumed 7,000 pounds of vegetables through the Wild Oats Healthy Lunch Program. A good beginning never ends. Pinecobble.org. And Watercolors by Edith, Shutesbury, Massachusetts. Edith Hunsberger, a painter in acrylic and watercolors, specializing in portrait paintings of people and pets from photographs. Edith-Hunsberger.artistwebsites.com. Thanks again to Carrie O'Loughlin for being here on this Pets and Vets edition. Thanks to Zach Malloy, who did a great job on the controls. Your phones were answered by Bruce Herbach, our producer, Jessica Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, oh man, what an embarrassment of riches. It's the gardening show tomorrow. Stay tuned now for news.